ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What are your first memories of childhood? Think carefully. Reach back a little bit. In a moment, I'll introduce you to Brenda Matthews. Her earliest memories are of growing up with a sister in a loving household. Brenda didn't know it at the time, but her parents adopted her, thinking, "Well, we're doing okay. The cost of living's tight, but we're making enough. Let's add another one to our little family." They adopted my guest Brenda at all of 2 years of age. They loved her, cherished her, as much as the daughter they already had together. 5 glorious years together as a family, until they were told, "We need to remove little Brenda and take her back to her Indigenous family. The father, a recovering alcoholic, he's happy to have her back." Brenda's memories of this time are of being thrust into a home of strangers, but soon she realised they were her bloodline, her brothers and sisters, her mum and dad. Mum and dad had fought hard for Brenda's return because she was the last daughter. The last daughter taken away with 6 others, all removed from their home in 1970. Brenda's adoptive parents, Mark and Connie, sadly lost track of Brenda. But Connie told Brenda just before Mac had to give her over to her biological parents, "Don't you forget about us. Come and find us." How could you forget? How could you? Could you? So, if when I asked you what your first memories of childhood were, of a doll or maybe a train set, a loving grandmother, a loving mother, think about the first memories of Brenda Matthews and the story you're about to hear on ABC Overnights.
When my little girl was only 2.5...
We talked adoption.
I said, "Oh, it'll be hard, but it'll be worth it."
She says, "This is Brenda. I can live that moment forever, even if I get to be 200 years old."
When we got married, we were so happy. I had 7 children, and the whole 7 of them were taken. But we knew in our hearts that we'd get them back.
When I came back to my black family, I felt like I was intruding in on their family. I knew I had fragmented memories of a little white sister. I had to get answers. I had to go back.
"This is your street, Brenda."
That's the place where we were deemed neglected children. When I went back into my welfare files, it just didn't add up. I started getting more flashbacks, more memories.
I said to her, "Make sure that when you get older, you come and find us." And she said, "I will, I will."
I realised that there was a deeper love there that nothing could take away. Suddenly, I received this letter. What?
We thought we were the heroes, but we would end up being the villains.
They were lied to, and we were lied to. I'm sharing truth on both sides of the story. In our culture, that's what we did. We shared stories.
I'd just like to prove that this Aboriginal lady was a good mother. I looked after
them. We were just hoping to get back some of the history that we'd lost with her.
Together, we can find a way to the real truth.
The true history of this country has not been told.
I had to focus on the love. I'm just reflecting my father and mother, black and white.
Brenda Matthews is a mother, now a grandmother, a storyteller, author, and speaker. a proud Wiradjuri woman living with her husband Mark on Bundjalung country up in northern New South Wales. Through the story, her story, that you're about to hear, Brenda invites people to walk together with a deeper connection and understanding. Her story is one of vulnerability, heartbreak, resilience, perseverance, and healing. Brenda reveals her hidden past to bring Indigenous understanding to today's modern world, no matter what the colour of your skin. Brenda and her six siblings were taken from their Indigenous parents when she was all of two. She lived with a loving foster family for the next 5 years in a country town, unaware that her Aboriginal family was struggling to bring her home again, what they were going through to find the last daughter. We need to hear of truth-telling, and the story told by Brenda Matthews in the documentary The Last Daughter is gut-wrenching. Yet it's an example of how overcoming the greatest obstacles can free us to help others. The power in Brenda's story is matched only by its honesty and its hope. Brenda Matthews joins me to yarn today about her unique life, her perspectives, and share it with you here on ABC Overnights. Brenda, welcome to Gadigal Country.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Your first memories, Brenda, of growing up, they were with the foster family, weren't they? That was your family.
Yes. The first memory I could remember was my white father taking me back across the road to my biological mum and dad's home. So, but always had memories of my little white sister, you know, plucking chickens out the back with my father, Mac, and Connie, my white mum, mixing the cream in the mixer blades, giving it to me and Rebecca to lick the cream off. Yeah, lovely. Yeah.
My nan used to do that.
Oh, yes. So good memories.
Great memories.
Yeah.
But then you find yourself with what is your biological family. You weren't aware that these are your brothers and sisters suddenly you put into the home with.
Yeah, well, I was two when I was taken away from mum and dad, so, and my brothers and sisters. So when I returned, I thought my white family were my family. And then being told that they weren't really my family and I had another family, I only had one visit back with them. So it was just a quick transition. You know, it wasn't a slow transition to get to know everybody. So, for a long time it was a struggle, I think, to even understand the story I was in.
Yeah, because you're the baby and here are all these older people around you that you had no idea of.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Crazy. I had to even be reintroduced to my own family, so that's a bit of a wild one.
Yeah. Now, Connie and Mac, who were the foster parents, they had you ripped away from them, didn't they?
Yes. They always thought they were adopting me, and they put in an adoption form thinking that they were going to do that, not understanding that I would be later taken back home because, my white mum says that she wouldn't have adopted someone. Oh, she wouldn't have fostered someone who she'd have to send back because it broke her heart and broke everybody else's heart that, I had connection with in my white family.
And Mac, I mean, he talks about that long walk down the front yard into what is your real mum's home. Mm. And your brothers and sisters are watching him and he has to hand you back somebody that to him was his own daughter.
Yeah. I think he struggled with that. You know, they didn't even want to tell me that they were taking me back home. It was hard for him to turn away and walk away and let me go. So, you know, he didn't know what else to say, but to mum, he's your daughter, and just walked out and,
That's tough. I mean, that's tough for Mac. It's tough for Connie, your mum. And then you're home with I think Nana Brenda, that's
yes.
mum,
yep.
your
yep.
real mum. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So suddenly you're home again. Your memories of mum and dad too, Gary, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of good memories with mum and dad, you know, taking us fishing, swimming, camping, travelling around the communities, singing and, listening to dad share story and all that. Good memories of, you know, meeting up with the cousins and that on holidays and everything. And, sort of just trying to make life normal again, I think, when we all come back home.
Now, you weren't aware that your family, your Indigenous family, was struggling to get you back home again. You were unaware of that. You were such a kid, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah.
And you were taken, you were one of seven children taken from your mum.
Yes.
And there was no reason for you all to be taken in the first place.
Yeah. Dad was just following the work around and, you know, he's taken his family with him. And we were staying with a family friend in Gilgandra. So all of a sudden, you know, welfare turn up at the door and say, we're here to take your children away. So, yeah, very hard time for mum and dad.
Yeah. This is Dad Gary.
When I got home, my wife said that our little children had been taken away from us. The whole seven of them. We was terrible downhearted and big emptiness in the heart. Nothing could fill it. Only your little children fill that spot.
That's just tough, isn't it?
Mm.
And your dad was a pastor.
Yeah.
A man of God.
Mm-hmm.
The home was beautiful.
Mm.
And yet you were taken away.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it wasn't even our house. So, you know, try to figure that out. But, it's, like I said, a very hard time for them, you know. And even my younger brother, he wasn't taken away. He was there and he thought that was his own mum and dad.
Yeah.
And then to have all these siblings come home and, he lost identity and belonging in that space too. So he struggled too, like all of us, you know, trying to find our way in this family that we were all taken away from.
And afterwards, when you're all gone, I just couldn't imagine what your mum must have gone through. And anybody that's a parent listening to this right now, this is mum.
What could you say? Can't say anything. Very lonely. You just sit on their beds, pick up their little teddy bears, dolls, and cuddle them. What can you do? No little kids running around, singing out, "Mummy, can I have this? Daddy, can I have that?" There's nothing you could do. But sit there with all that pain and hurt of your children being taken from you. It's all you can do.
That is just incredibly powerful.
Mm.
And that's your mum.
Mm. It's a very strong woman.
But they were determined too.
Yes.
To get you back.
Yes. Yeah.
So we move forward a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You're now living in Bundjalung country up in the Northern Rivers of New South Wales.
Yes.
You've met up with a fella called Mark who's here with us in the studio.
I sure did.
And how did you both work out there was more to Brenda's story than what it had met the eye when you first met Brenda?
Well, she was doing cultural camps with me as a friend,
yep.
as a guide, and she just shared her story with me one day and it broke my heart. And just out of the blue, I said to her, I think this would benefit these students on the camp. Would you be willing to share? And she was afraid. She didn't want to do it.
Why were you afraid, Brenda?
It hurt. And I just couldn't get the words out. And, I didn't want to go through that pain of sharing a story that was so painful.
Had you blocked it all out?
Yes. Yep. Blocked it all out and I just, I suppose too I was scared that, because I always wanted to go back and find them, but I was scared of rejection and hurt and pain again. So I think bringing up a story like that,
yeah.
Why would you want to do that?
And for me, I didn't, it wasn't me being a bad person, getting her to share a story. I just sort of realised she's soft, she's quiet, she's humble, but she's got such a beautiful spirit. And I just felt at the time, even though she was saying she didn't want to do it, I felt in my heart that she needed to do it.
Yeah.
And I think she was a little bit resistant at first, but then I thought she knew, no, this is the time, and the time is now. And I had to draw a line in the sand, and she didn't want to go up to that line, but she went up to that line, she rubbed it out, and of course, Brenda, she moved about 3 metres back because that was too close in her space. And then she got me to stand beside her, and then she shared that story.
And so you met up with Mum and Dad, Connie and Mac again, your adoptive parents who thought they'd have you for the rest of their lives. What was that like?
Oh, that was amazing, you know, just to understand story on that side and to realise that they did want to know me.
Yeah.
They did always, sorry, probably going to cry.
They always wanted to know where you were. In fact, before you left, they said, don't you forget us now. You come back one day and come and say hello.
Yeah, my white mother wrote down on a piece of paper, you know, her address, and that's the last thing.
Yeah, but it was some clever work on behalf of your daughters, Mark, that found Connie and Mac again.
Yeah, good old Uncle Google. I think they had to go to 30 pages or something to find their name.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. Incredible. And the detective work found out that, sadly, your little sister, the girl that you grew up with, your early memories are with, had passed away. But you still got in contact with that family. Tell me about that era, that whole time.
Yeah, well, it was a weird space because, you know, you're looking for your little white sister and then all of a sudden you get news like that. And I think the curiosity still wanted me to find my wider family and go back and see if they wanted, you know, to know me again or wanted remember anything, you know, so I could put the pieces together of my puzzle and story, you know. But just to, I think that sense in Connie, my white mum, writing down that piece of paper, come back and find me, I think that was that deeper love drawing me back in there, you know, when I couldn't reconnect that with my little white sister, you know, I reconnected that with my wider family, so which was amazing.
I sometimes think spirit pushes us on, and I love in our Indigenous culture that we believe in spirit. And I went out to Uluru and the local fellas out there have this thing called Chukapa, which they talk about. It's the spirit that pushes you on.
Mm.
Did you feel it was your sister that was calling you back to Connie and Mac?
I think so, because it was that deeper love and it was drawing me back in into that family sense, into that circle, so to speak. You know, my father's always said, you can only mend family circles with love. And that for sure it was that deeper love that was pulling me down that path to find them.
When your mum spoke in the documentary, The Last Daughter, I mean, the book is just powerful, but the documentary, when Mum spoke, it just broke my heart. I had to pause. I couldn't believe that you would lose all your children, 7 of them, and 5, 6 came back and you were the last daughter to return to Mum. How did she feel about you seeking out Connie and Mac again?
Oh, we talked about that today. That was a very hard space because I didn't want to make her feel rejected or unloved and unwanted, you know, as a mother. And seeking her approval and giving the blessing to go ahead and find my white family was very, I think, respectful to our relationship and our journey as a mother and a daughter, you know, to be able to give me that permission and go and find my white family.
Because she fought hard to get you back.
Yes.
Her and Dad.
Yes.
Incredible.
Yeah, they're incredible people.
And then to give the love, to say, yeah, go back, find Connie and Mag.
Yeah, because when I first asked, the first word she said, well, what do you want to go find them for? Which is understandable because, you know, in her eyes, she thinks that they were the white family or white people that took us away, you know, not understanding the whole story. But also on my white side, you know, they were, my black side was portrayed as being neglectful parents.
Yes, in fact, they were told that your dad was a recovering alcoholic and that's why they were taking you back again.
Yes, and they were shocked when they heard us say, you know, that that wasn't the case.
No.
Yeah.
A good Christian man with a good Christian wife who were Christian in heart and in value. And yet somebody did this to them. Have you ever found out why? Is there a reason why?
No, I just think that they thought they had the...
the authority,
I guess. The authority to do that. Yeah. And but I believe Mum and Dad stood, you know, firmly on what they believed in, and they just fought to get us all back home, which they did, which is amazing, you know, because a lot of us didn't make it home, didn't make it back. And a lot of us are still out there trying to find family and connection, you know, and belonging, identity, all of that.
There's more to the story, particularly with the stolen generation, that we don't really have a lot of time to go into here. Yeah. You'll find in the book and in the documentary. But you weren't necessarily considered one of the stolen generation.
No, I wasn't considered stolen generation, not classified as having trauma or...
Wrongfully taken.
Yeah, wrongfully placed. You know, just trying to find my identity and all that, I was like, well, who am I? Where do I belong? You know, I had two families, two homes to belong to, but couldn't find identity, connection and belonging in either one.
So you've really had to find your own self, Brenda Matthews, haven't you?
Yes, and I think I had to come to the realisation that I had to reconcile with my own hurt and pain before I could reconcile with everybody else in my story. So, yeah, when I reconcile with my own hurt and pain, that was helping me on that healing journey.
How do you do that?
Just listen from within. You know, I didn't realise I was carrying all this hurt and pain, rejection and trauma, and just listening to the way I was carrying my story wasn't the right way. So, you know, I had to take responsibility and start sharing and carrying my story right way to find that healing.
And you share your story now with a lot of people in the hope that we can walk together, we can understand each other a lot better, right?
Yes, yes. And I think, you know, we're so good at judging each other and interrogating each other, but it's so hard for us to interrogate ourselves, you know. So I think when I did that, I was able to, you know, find that reconciliation, that healing, that forgiveness and walk in that love. And also thanks to my white family, you know, and my black family for sharing that love with me, you know, and the forgiveness they had for each other. That's amazing. You know, if we could all reflect that, that healing story, what a wonderful country we'd be walking in.
Who do you tell your story to now?
Students, teachers, the
workplaces, corporates, government sector, even the department that took her, she shared her story.
Yeah, so you should. I would be seeking revenge, or I would be bitter inside, but you don't seem bitter at all.
Oh, I just figured there's enough of that going around in the world. Mm. Why should I contribute more of that into the world when I can contribute love, which my... you know, families on both sides have done to me, and I can walk in that, you know, and share that around than the other, you know, because that's carrying story right way.
What's the story that you tell everybody?
That I found healing through sharing my story, and we all have a story, you know, but I think because of our hurt and pain that we carry, we can't share our stories, you know, and I think... like I said, once we reconcile with our own hurt and pain, we can all do that. You know, it's sort of like individual healing for a collective healing. And then we can start closing the gap, I think, in this country and start walking together.
Yeah. understand each other a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you go about finding your Indigenous background when you were back home again?
Oh, that was a bit of a struggle because the only thing I knew of my culture was having black skin and an Aboriginal flag. So, you know, I didn't know any of my culture, not knowing that, you know, Mum and Dad were sharing that with us by taking us fishing, the practices and, you know, collecting from the land, you know, food from the land, oysters and fishing and all that stuff. But didn't realise that growing up, you know, only when I got older and realised that I had a story and that we had a culture, you know, and being able to go back on country with uncles and aunties and brothers and sisters, helping to contribute knowledge, you know, where they held the knowledge for stuff in these cultural practices, helped me to understand that, hey, I'm part of something, yeah. You know.
What is the reaction like when you tell your story?
A bit like yours when we first saw you. you know, grateful, cuddling and amazed at the story, you know. And I'm so glad that people can find a connection through the story, through their own lived experience, because I wouldn't want it to be just about me, you know. That's it's not, how can I say it, it's not a practice, you know, that I practice just about self, you know. It's about the collective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're certainly not, as I said, not bitter, but also you're wanting to tell the story to join in community, really, of any colour or any background.
Yeah. Well, you know, our Western brothers and sisters and all the other nations have joined our circle, you know, in this country now. So we've just got to find an entry point into the circle in this country, you know, through your own story, through your own lived experience. But, yeah, that's how I think we can contribute to relationship in this country, you know, that we can all come together as one and walk together as brothers and sisters, you know.
Yeah. Sadly, the result wasn't what we wanted in the referendum for some of us, 60-40. That must really, that it hurt me. I'd been out walking and marching and trying to do my side of things. How did it feel for you, somebody that walks in both worlds?
It was a bit difficult because when the day we went to vote, I couldn't get out of the car. I just couldn't understand how I, you know, Western culture wanted me to go and vote for myself being into existence in my own country, in my own home. I couldn't understand that. And I just broke down because it took me back to being taken away again, you know, that little girl. And, yeah, I struggled for a long time, you know, and I believe we've always had a voice in this country but no one to listen to, you know, and maybe they should have called it ears instead of voice.
Yeah. I was worried because through the plebiscite for marriage equality, there are a lot of really hurtful things that were said. So when they decided they were going to have a referendum with our Indigenous brothers and sisters, I thought, I don't know if they know what they're about to be in for.
Mm.
There were some hurtful things said, weren't there?
Yeah.
How do you block that out? How do you get through that? Because, you know, for the plebiscite, there was a lovely outcome. But for that referendum, it shocked me.
Yeah. All along my journey, I've learned that hurt people hurt people. But heal people heal people. So being able to carry a healing story and share that, but also acknowledging the hurt and the pain that someone is projecting on you when they say hurtful things, to go to that listening place and say, well, how do I navigate this space? I don't want to carry that hurt and pain. I want to deflect that so I can reflect the healing that helps me to carry that story right way. Because we all hurt, you know, but we can be healed if we choose to and we want to.
The difficulty now, of course, is they talk about closing the gap. How do we go about doing that? Is it a matter of listening to each other? Is it about truth-telling, like what you're doing here?
Yeah, I think it's about truth-telling, but also having that safe space to be able to tell that in. I think, like I said earlier, reflecting on our own trauma and hurt and pain that we're carrying and finding healing through our own stories. I think we've put so many plans in place. It can't be about a change of plans anymore. It has to be a change of heart and the heart condition and what you're carrying within your heart. If we can search our own stories and start carrying the healing story through our own stories and lived experience, but the love that my white family and my black family were giving to me, we can start finding that deeper love and listening in that deeper place. I think we can start closing that gap one by one, you know, because we all have a responsibility to contribute to this relationship we are all in now in this country.
I had the great privilege of, before he passed, talking to Archie Roach and discussing with him the Scottish family that he grew up with and the fact that his dad had taught him he'd come from clans as a Scotsman and that Archie came from clans as an Indigenous young fella. Archie was saying that it's very difficult to walk in both worlds, you know, acting white, feeling black.
Yeah. Well, for a long time, as Indigenous people, we've had to leave our spirituality and our Aboriginality out the door of these hallways and doorways, you know, these house structures. And that's where we struggle every day as Indigenous people, you know. But we've joined these practices now. But we can't forget about our own practices because it's everything's connected for us. Nothing exists in isolation. So being able to understand your story and who you are, your identity, your belonging and your connection to country, we can start to navigate the Western world and learn to walk in both worlds, you know, and that's not just for Indigenous people. You know, we can all walk like that.
We need to learn to walk a little bit in blackfellas' shoes.
True.
Archie was telling me also that it's not just the black families, the Indigenous families that were hurt by some of the past practices of our government. It was the white families.
That's what I figured out when I went back home to my white family. Yeah, they were just devastated when I left. Even before I caught up with my white family, a couple of weeks before that, my white mother was telling me that she was walking with her niece and she was having a baby. I think she was pregnant, and they were talking about motherhood and children. And she said to her, "I miss Brenda." Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, Brenda, of course, was her daughter, just taken from her as much as she was from Nana Brenda. It is a gut-wrenching story, but it's incredible the amount of hope that you've got.
Yes, it's amazing, you know, and I'm so grateful that, sorry, I'm going to cry again, I'm so grateful that I had two beautiful families to be part of and that it's not about colour. It's about that love, that deeper love that we share, you know, and contribution to and respect to relationship that we have with each other, you know, and I find that amazing. I even, you know, my mother and my white mother and father, the relationship that they have, you know, and even my uncles and aunties, you know, asking for my family and how are they doing, you know, that's wonderful to hear because they're actually interested in your side of the family too?
Yeah, both sides. So it must be one heck of a big family these days.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing, especially when you have Christmas parties.
Oh, yes, lots of Christmas presents, but lots of people around as well. That must be warming for the heart.
Yeah, it's wonderful, you know. My uncle always dresses up at Santa every...
Well, yeah, because you can't get the real
that's
Santa.
Right.
Yeah, I understand, yeah. You took in a lot of high schools. What's the reaction like from the younger generation? Is that where we're really starting to get a bit more understanding?
I think so, because I think the young fellas nowadays are sort of open to this stuff. And, you know, they're struggling for identity and belonging too and connection. And, you know, just to be able to share story but encourage them to share story too. You know, they have a story and to start to write it down or speak it out or draw a painting or something, artwork or something to express, you know, your story through that. I remember when we connected back with Rebecca's two children, you know, her daughter loved dancing. So she did this dance for her her love.
Rebecca was your sister.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So her daughter, Shay, you know, she did this beautiful dance for expressing how she missed her mother.
Yeah. You miss her as well. That that spirit pushing you on to find Connie and Mac again was the part of the documentary that I loved. Again, your mum saying, you know, the fact that there was a knock on the door and there was nothing that she could do. Even the word welfare for a boy that grew up in the country, that word welfare was triggering for me. So
yeah.
They really had incredible power back then.
Yeah, they did. You know, in the lady's house, the lady whose house we were staying at, getting back in contact with her and asking her questions, you know, her side of the story, it was devastating for her too because they tried to take her kids before we got there, you know, and that was hurtful to hear. But then when we were taken, they couldn't handle it anymore, so they sold that house and they moved away. I got back in contact with them and she was watching the Last Daughter film and her son come home and he heard Gilgandra on the TV and he said, "Oh, what are you watching, Mum?" "Oh, this is our story, you know. That was our house that these kids were taken from." And she rang me up and she said, "Oh, my son wants to talk to you." And I said, "Okay, then." So when I got on the phone, he said, "Oh, I'm so sorry, Brenda." I said, "What for?" He said, "Oh, you got taken away and we didn't."
What a really hurtful time, a really hurtful period in Australian history, but also the fact that it reverberates and continues to reverberate through family, even to this day. But we'd moved from Rudy Hill as a boy and a little place called Palamalawar outside of Moree. And the young fellas there taught me the fish and hunt. But I remember there was a knock on the door one day and Mum answered the door and it was the woman from next door. And she said, "My kid's a crook. Noni, my mum, can you give them something? Is there something I can give them?" And Mum said, "Chuck them in the car. We'll go into town, into the hospital." And she goes, "We can't do that." My mum said, "Why not?" She goes, "Because I'm black."
Yeah, well.
And that was just, but even more hurtful for me, I jumped in the car, helped out get the kids in the hospital, was the looks on the faces of people in that hospital that here's a white woman next to a woman who's Indigenous and how dare you? Why? Why did that ever happen? So where do we go now into the future? What would you like to see as somebody that treads both paths?
Yeah.
How do you think we need to get a compromise? How do we go about getting a compromise?
We need to start listening, you know, listening to the stories, even listening to yours. You know, you have a connection to your own Indigenous family, you know, and that. And so grateful that your mum helped them out, you know, because not a lot of people were like that. I think that hopefully that lady was safe with her kids, you know, with your mum being there, you know, and I think that's what we need to start doing, supporting each other through this. Because we can't do it alone. We can't do it without each other. We need to support each other, you know. And you're right, you know, it happened to the system.
The system lets us all down.
Yeah, because it was white fellas were taken away too and, you know, sent off to different places and that. And for a mother or a child, you know, going through that, or a father, that's very hurtful no matter what colour you are. Trauma doesn't discriminate, hurt and pain doesn't discriminate, you know, and we are all affected by that. But that deeper love don't discriminate either, you know, when we start looking for that and we can start walking in that and looking for healing ourselves. I mean, who are we going to be in another 250 years? Are we going to keep reflecting the trauma and the pain of the past story, or are we going to start carrying a healing story and reconciling with each other? Reconciling with ourselves.
You're certainly helping those steps forward with what you're doing.
Hopefully, yes.
What an incredible book it is.
Thank you.
Just an incredible book, an incredible doco as well. Mark, putting it together, the documentary, what's the reaction been like now that that's out there and people are starting to sit and watch?
It's been amazing, but I think it goes on from the question that you ask. Brenda stood in front of the department that took her and we said to them, "Are they willing to walk with us?" And they said they are. And I think for too long we've butted heads and they've always been the enemy. we can't butt heads forever. And I think that's what we've come to terms with ourselves, that they are our brothers and our sisters. And if we treat each other as family, we can make change. And we see hope in the system that took Brenda. You know, they know it's broken and they want to make change. So that's a great start. So we're starting that journey with the department, and Brenda's talking with other departments in other states. And I think that's the wonderful thing about the film and the book. I think they've started to interrogate their own system and their own culture. So we're at that point. I think there is hope. And we're going to continue to share story. We're going to walk in that healing. And we need you to walk with us.
Yeah. I highly recommend watching or reading The Last Daughter. So for you, Mark, seeing some of these school kids and some of the people that you tell Brenda's story to, Brenda tells her story to them, and the reaction, what's the inner feeling that you get?
Well, as a white person, I just love the fact that Indigenous people are now given a safe space where we can go into school, not only for non-Indigenous students, but also for the Indigenous students, that they don't need to walk in shame anymore.
You don't feel shame, do you, Brenda?
Not now. Sorry. No. Not now, because, you know, I have that safe space, and I'm proud, not proud in a look-at-me sense, but proud that I've learnt to understand my story and to share that and carry it in a right way, you know. So, yeah.
Well, you're doing it for all the right reasons, aren't you? You're telling your story simply to help others.
Mm, yeah, and like I said, it's an amazing story, and a lot of people from all different cultures find a connection to the story, you know, and it's just truly amazing. And that's like more compensation that I can ever hope for, you know, to be able to pass healing down to my children and grandchildren, you know, the next generation. That's to me, that's beautiful.
Yeah, well, that's an amazing story, and it gets deeper and deeper the more the layers, and it continues, because all the families are together now, and what an incredible Christmas you must have, as you mentioned. Just incredible. I really thank you for coming in and speaking with me today, Brenda. And Mark, thank you for coming in as well.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you. And it's on Netflix too.
The movie is on Netflix at the moment, but it's coming out, I believe, Mark?
I think it may come out NAIDOC week.
Yes.
Ah, beautiful.
We haven't been told from the broadcaster, but...
On ABC.
On ABC. They backed us. They supported us. So thank you, ABC.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, that's good. I mean, I get texts sometimes saying you're an inner woke whatever. I won't use the next word. And you look at the text and you think, I grew up with the Gomeroi boys. Mm. You know, they taught me to fish and hunt. Yeah. You know, I bought a little pen knife. Yeah. They've got, that's not a knife. Yeah. That's a knife. That's the knife that they took. And I immersed myself in so much of their culture that even to this day, it's so important to me. And it needs to be said too that you've got allies in other areas of our community.
Yes.
That we understand the hurt recently. But please don't let that result be any reflection on the people out there that really want to see you succeed.
Yes, no, I mean, it's people like you and my white family, you know, that and others who have supported us along the way, who want to follow us on this journey, and who want to make change and who want to be the change. And that's amazing to me. So I thank you.
It's actually strengthened us.
Yeah.
The result has strengthened us. It's made us more resilient.
Yeah.
And we're going to continue to walk in that victory. And that's where we're going to find hope.
It's an incredible story. It really is an incredible story. The Last Daughter, Brenda and Mark, thank you so much for coming in and talking with me here on ABC.
Thank you, David.
Wonderful. Let's all have a feed, brother.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.